Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick. 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen. And Connor Newt here with you. We're talking about the Predators making trades. And guess what? They reportedly have. During the break. From our friend Elliot Freeman. Apparently Chris McFarland only has Joe Sakic's phone number. Because Chris McFarland has made another trade with the Colorado Avalanche. According to Elliot Freeman, the Predators are acquiring forward Jack Drury, a prospect, and a third-round pick. So three pieces. Jack Drury, a prospect, and a third-round pick for Fedor Svechkov and Zachary LaRue. From Elliot Freeman, Drury, comma, a prospect, and a third-round pick to Colorado for Svechkov and LaRue. Willie Donick, your immediate reaction.
Wow, this is very fresh. So I have not had time really to think this through. During the break, we were scrambling to come up with some numbers on Jack Drury, especially. I also want to know if it's a real, quote, prospect and not just a guy.
Well, Pierre LeBrun says Chase Bradley. So why don't you Google Chase Bradley? Because it's Svechkov and LaRue for Drury, Chase Bradley, and Colorado's third-round pick in 2029.
Right. I feel like 2029?
Yes.
I feel like Nashville has all of Colorado's third-round picks, or at least had them at one time over the next – what's the guy's name again? Bradley?
Chase Bradley.
Okay, we're going to have to get the file on Mr. Bradley. Chase Bradley.
Yes, but while you're doing that, I just want to note that Fedor Svechkov and Zachary LaRue were both first-round picks of the Nashville Predators. Svechkov was the 19th overall pick in 2021. LaRue, if memory serves, was in the same draft class. He was 27th in 2021. So let's just list quickly some of the first-round picks the Predators have made in recent memory who aren't on the team anymore. Go back all the way to 2016. Dante Fabro, waived. 2017, Elli Tolvanen, waived. 2019, Filip Tomasino, he was traded, correct?
Correct.
2020, Yaroslav Askarov, traded. Now, Fedor Svechkov, traded. Zachary LaRue, traded. Part of the issue why the Predators are where they are right now is because many of the first-round picks they've made over the past decade are not meaningful players for the team.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
I think that's a little bit of, you're right, why they are where they are. They haven't hit. And most of those guys are not high first-round picks. They're more mid to low first-round picks. Askarov would be one in a different category than some of the other ones. Chase Bradley, as I'm looking at it here, it does not appear that he is a high-end prospect. From what I can tell, maybe they see something that I don't.
But how does this make this team better? Is it just
guys that he knows?
I'm clearing space on the roster.
Like, yes.
With Jack Drury and with Ross Colton, it appears that Chris McFarland, he thinks those guys are better, younger than Eric Halla, and in this case, probably better than Svechkov, who was very enigmatic, right? Svechkov, extremely popular.
Hold on, stop. What word did you just use to describe him?
Enigmatic.
Oh, thanks. It's worthy of a bell.
Yeah. Would you agree? That fits.
Yes. I mean,
he's a really interesting kid, and he flashes moments of brilliance, but he also drove them crazy at the same time.
I had lost a little faith in his ability to be an everyday NHL player.
Yes, or at least beyond, a fourth or third line.
Yeah.
I still think there's hope for him to be good, but he was reaching the point that Tomasino made. Hey, there's some good games in there. There's some games where like, hey, look what he did. Mm-hmm. Is this the start of something? And he's at the age where I think they believe that he's not going to turn into a great player. So are they better on the margins with Drury and the roster space? Now, the one that surprised me a little bit was that they would trade LaRue. I thought LaRue played well down the stretch last year. He had an injury-riddled first half of the year. And I thought he's a guy that still could take a jump and be a good, solid player. So that's surprised me a little bit. Drury, I think they're hoping the same thing that they're hoping for with Colton. Playing on a really deep team with Colorado, didn't get to play a whole lot. Really good complimentary player in the role. Could they be a little bit better on the Predators?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And Drury was part of the original Mikko Rantanen trade between Colorado and Carolina. And Drury was playing, I want to say, fourth-line center.
Yes. And Drury, by the way, is a true center.
Yes.
Who takes a lot of face-offs. And, again, the value of a true center, who is probably an upgrade on Svechkov, who was basically the fourth-line center for the Predators, right? Fair to say?
Yes.
Who is not a good face-off guy.
Yeah.
Drury is just a better player than Svechkov. But the root part of it is the one that I'm like, ooh, that's you better really like Drury. But
so,
Drury is young.
Yes,
right?
He is 26. He is a pending restricted free agent. So he needs a new contract. He was previously under a two-year contract that paid him $1.725 million per year. He's been in the NHL for parts of six seasons. This past season with the Colorado Avalanche, 10 goals, 27 points in 82 games, again, as the team's fourth-line center. We'll take your reaction, 615-737-1025. Caleb says, love the trade. Those two guys, meaning Svechkov and LaRue, were misses. Matthew from Jolton says, Predators just got fleeced. So two varying opinions on the trade. But to me, it goes back to what I listed before, that this is part of the reason why the Predators are desperately missing that group of 23, 24, 25, 26-year-olds is because their first-round picks, many of their first-round picks in recent years, have not panned out here. Again, Dante Fabro was waived. Eli Tolvanen was waived. Philip Tomasino was traded. Yaroslav Askarov was traded. I understand the situation with Askarov, Willie, but nevertheless, Askarov was traded. Now, Svechkov and LaRue have been traded. That's six players drafted in the first round between 2016 and 2021 who are no longer on the team.
That in and of itself doesn't bother me. It's what did
it bothers me a little bit.
Well, but what did you get for him? I mean, that's going to be the question is, did you wheel them into something better?
Well, Fabro and Tolvanen, you didn't get anything because right. You waived them. Tomasino, I don't remember what that trade. It's a
fourth round pick.
Okay. And did they make that fourth round pick? I don't remember what came of Tomasino.
It might be this draft. I'm not sure.
I'll have to look.
Might have been last year.
I mean, with Askarov.
But are you – there becomes a point where a lot of picks, whether they're first round or second round, once you get to 22, 23 and you're not making it happen in your current address, you either have to sign him to a new contract and hold out hope or you move on. So I don't think it's that uncommon for a pick that's, you know, between 15 and 25 in some cases to just not be a huge impact player. They're going to be in the league, but are they really going to be an impact player in the league? Like, we'll see if Tolvanen – Tolvanen is the one that obviously was – that was one that burned them from the day that it happened, right? That was just bad. Fabro, you know, are they really missing Dante Fabro? He's a good, solid defenseman. He's an NHL defenseman. So I would argue that hasn't killed them, but they didn't get anything for him. And these other ones, they're not turning into great players. Now, this is brand new, right? Svechkov and LaRue, especially LaRue, I was holding out some hope that he would be a guy that stuck, but now we'll see about Drury.
Now, they've added more draft picks to the draft picks they already got. How do you think they use all this? Is this a way for them to package this and either move up further in the draft or to package it and just become a better team as, you know, making trades to become a better team?
It's a good question. They've wheeled and dealed so many third-round picks, I've lost count. They just traded two the other day, mm-hmm. and they just got one back today. I do think that the number of picks they have give them the ability to go make some deals like this. Maybe not, Adam, for the big names that are going to make the headlines around the league, But I think what you're seeing Chris McFarland do is he feels like these moves will make them better on the margins. And these guys are solid upgrades and in the age range that they're looking for, 26 to 29, rather than 32 and up or 21 and under. Does that make sense? I feel like that's the theme. And maybe they do well at the little things. They can be a little more consistent. They've been on winning teams. And maybe that will help the remaining prospects, which there are a lot of, be ready to find their path.
These moves, bringing in Drury, bringing in Ross Colton, they seem to signal to me, and you guys tell me if you agree or not, it signals to me that the Predators are if, like we were talking about with Greg in the first hour, if you think the Predators are going to really tear it down, it's not happening right now. Like, these are moves I think these are moves made by a team that sees itself trying to compete this coming season. And whether or not that's just my gut feeling. Do you think that's a reasonable gut feeling to have, Willie?
I don't know. I can see it going either way. I used the reference at the end of last hour. If it's a 15-floor building, I like the idea of, because they have all these prospects, picks, salary cap space, do they have to go all the way down to the ground floor to get up to the 15th floor from where they are?
The trade, by the way, has now been made official. Jack Drury and Chase Bradley and a third-round pick in the 2029 NHL draft. That kid's probably doing his math homework right now. To Nashville in exchange for Fedor Svechkov and Zachary LaRue. So the trade has been made official. And I just got the email. First from the Colorado Avalanche, interestingly enough.
Oh, nice that you're on that list.
Yeah, I know. To me, the other question, too, is, as you mentioned, Willie, Drury is a true center. Like yeah. Colton can play both. He played a lot of wing in Colorado because of all of the centers they had, including Drury. Does this signal another trade could be coming involving a center leaving Nashville?
Well, that I think is, when you say it looks like they're not going to break it down, that would be an argument of they still have the flexibility to go any number of directions. You got to have some people to play center. And when you have centers that are good, those are trade pieces as well. So there could be other moves coming for sure. So I don't know. It may be too early to tell if they're going for the playoffs. But I think what I would define it is, they want to get better at the margins, and they're looking for that middle 20s guy to make their roster shape up a little bit more where they want it to be, right? Not too many mid-30s guys, not too many young guys who aren't ready to help them yet.
Quickly, one texter says, the prospect, quote-unquote, in return is 24. The third is in 2029. On the surface, doesn't look great, but we'll see how it pans out. Hopefully, McFarland has other GM's phone numbers, because at some point, you've got to trade with someone other than Colorado. I mean, he's got a point there. 615-737-1025. The breaking news, the Predators have indeed made a trade. They have acquired forwards Jack Drury, prospect Chase Bradley, and Colorado's third-round pick in the 2019 draft, of course, from Colorado, for forwards Zachary LaRue and Fedor Svechkov. Your thoughts, 615-737-1025. We'll get back to this in just a little bit. Coming up next, Nick Suss of the Tennessean will join us as we talk Titans. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Nick Suss.
See,
of the Tennessean.
This music, D-Mace, doesn't resonate with the younger people.
No, it doesn't.
Does it resonate with you, Nick?
I'm trying to place this, honestly. Like, I know it. I know this. I just, I'm struggling. What is it? What are we listening to?
You want to go from the top? Can you take it from the top, Connor? The beginning is the real thing, but you have to be a certain age, I think, to hit it.
Let's see. Connor's gonna take care of it for us in just a moment. Here we go. It doesn't ring a bell for me either.
It's the NFL Today. Brent Musburger, back in the day.
Yeah, I was hearing like the theme of the Magnificent 7. I thought it was like an old 50s, like, Western theme.
Yeah.
But no, that's NFL today. You're right.
Yeah. So, Nick, you wrote a story on the Tennessee, and we discussed it a little bit yesterday. What should the Titans do next? Five outside-the-box off-season recommendations. Of the five recommendations you made, which one do you think has the highest likelihood of happening?
I put them in order of realistic to me just making crap up because it's the off-season. So the top of the article, extending Peter Skoronski seems plausible. Going out and getting a veteran corner to add to the room feels somewhat plausible. I think all this stuff can happen. Toward the bottom, five is a better number than three, I guess. So I just kept writing to fill the page. Look, if my ideas were good, I wouldn't be working for the newspaper. I'd be working for the team. But, like, not to totally deflate the segment. Yeah, it's a fun exercise. You look at this team, you know it's not complete. You know it's a team that obviously could use any upgrade just about anywhere. But, yeah, if we're talking about plausibility, there's a lot of high upside corners that you can go get on the veteran market. There are some edge rushers who I think would be super helpful if you could go get them, and they'd be willing to play for a team that maybe isn't in the contending class right now. There's a couple of things you can do, but toward the end we get to more of just the me being creative for the sake of being creative aspect of the article.
Well, one thing I did like later in the article for the creative for the sake of being creative was your idea that the Titans should hire Pete Carroll as an analyst in a role similar to what Jim Schwartz held under Mike Vrabel and Mike McCoy held under Brian Callahan. I mean, I know, again, you're being creative for the sake of being creative, but what do you actually think about that idea Go ahead.
Yeah, obviously I like it. I think that Sala and Gus Bradley both came from Pete Carroll's coaching tree. I think that if you look at the tentacles of what Pete Carroll has put into the NFL in the last 25 years, and also college football, a lot of disciples have been successful there as well. There's obviously a method to his madness. And you talk about, there were a lot of Seahawks guys that were on the team over the last couple of years that would talk about how much they liked playing for Pete Carroll, whether it was Tyler Lockett, whether it was Jamal Adams, a lot of these guys, Quandre Diggs would come through, talk about how beneficial the Pete Carroll system is. So having him around as a person that people like to play for is obviously a huge, huge deal, but also just another sounding board for Sala as he's trying to figure out how to make it work as an NFL head coach on this rebound. The Seahawks weren't the first team that Pete Carroll ever coached. USC wasn't the first team that Carroll ever coached. He had a long history of coaching before he got the jobs that really started to work out and be championship teams for him. So having that kind of sounding board for Sala in the building every day, I think would be a huge benefit if that was something they chose to do.
Talk with Nick Suss of the Tennessean. Now, Nick, another one of your outside-the-box moves was potentially trading Calvin Ridley for Stephon Diggs, or trading Calvin Ridley and bringing Stephon Diggs. I don't agree with it, but it is a interesting sort of move. It wouldn't be a bad move, I think, entirely, but I think for the sake of the quarterback, the rapport he has already built with Calvin Ridley, I think you just need to leave him there. But it is an interesting idea of moving Ridley to bring in Diggs.
Yeah, I'm not saying this just to defer. I think I agree with you. I honestly think that keeping Ridley is better in the sense that Ridley is more different from Parnell Tate than Stephon Diggs, who is a very similar profile receiver, and it might end up being redundant if you have two guys that play that way instead of Ridley, who's more of your straight-ahead speed guy with some burst and explosion and all that stuff. I like the idea. Steph Diggs is just coming off of, he's had more success historically. He has generally been a more successful pro receiver, but Ridley's still a perennial 1,000-yard guy when he's healthy. I like the idea of keeping him around. The one reason I brought it up is I know that Carnell Tate looks up to the way Diggs plays in a way that could be a helpful mentorship, pass the torch type situation. Again, there's a lot of big-time receivers who haven't signed yet. You could substitute Keenan Allen in here if you want to talk about it. You can bring back DeAndre Hopkins. There are names on the market, but I think that when I watched Tate in college, and I'm curious to see if you agree with this at all, that when I think about best-case scenario, who are the guys that if he reaches 100% of his potential, who's he going to be like? Devontae Adams and Stephon Diggs were the two people that I most thought about. I don't think he's either of those guys yet. I'm not going to put way too much expectation on him, but there's something interesting about being mentored by somebody who, in a way, you play like.
Yeah, I look at him more so as a T. Higgins type because of the frame and his ability to go up. But comparing him, ultimately, if he can get to those guys' status, I don't think that would be a bad thing at all. I think it would be a great thing for the Titans as well as Cam Ward. Now, they've gotten Jeffrey Simmons done. How long do you think it will be before they get Peter Skoronski done? Do you think this is a deal that they get done before the season, during the season, or do you think it's more so something they'll deal with in off season?
Yeah, my guess is if it's not done by the middle to end of training camp, it'll be in the off season. There's obviously no huge rush from the Skoronski camp. Mm-hmm. If he comes out and plays as well as he did last year, this year, he's going to make more money. He's going to have a bigger contract. The Titans don't necessarily need to pinch pennies right now. They've got a lot of money to play with, so it's not a bad thing if he goes out and plays well and you got to give him a bigger contract in the future. But just from the simple perspective of at a certain point, you're going to extend the guy, and the longer you wait, the more money he's going to cost. Wouldn't be shocked if they tried to get it done in camp, kind of like they did with Amani Hooker at this time last year. He was extended early on when there were some questions about his long-term future. I think that that's something teams do like to do. If they get it done before camp, awesome. If they get it done in these little 6 weeks here, but I don't get the feeling that it'll be something that is kind of looming over the regular season or anything like that.
We're talking to Nick Suss from the Tennessean, and Nick, let's take right now for granted that the Skoronski thing is going to get done at some point. Looking beyond that, where do you think they are on the future of J.C. Latham right now?
That's a trickier one. I think you need another year to see who he is before you determine how big you want to go. I'd kind of be surprised if they don't pick up the fifth-year option just because tackle is way too valuable of a position to take a gamble on that. And Titans fans know that very much firsthand from the Jack Conklin deal a couple of years back. But after that, when you look at the amount of money that tackles make, do you invest minimum $80 million in a guy who I think that maybe would have been a little bit underrated the way people talked about him last year? I don't think his season was as bad as some of the loudest fans online might point toward, but I still don't know if he's proven that he deserves top of the market contract money. So it's not a make or break year, because I think that if he's going to have to be a special kind of taking a step back for it to be a break year for him, but it very well could be a make year for him. So I don't know what the term is for make or break without the break, but he could definitely get to a point where he's in the same conversation Skoronski is this time next year. But I still do think that he's going to play out this rookie contract. It's going to be really hard for them to move off of him as they're still trying to prove you used a top 10 pick on a tackle. That's a premium draft pick with a premium contract attached to it, so they're gonna do everything they can to try to make him the guy at the very least.
One of the things that intrigued me about your outlook for the next few weeks here, you listed a lot of guys that were pretty notable names that are still sitting out there because of one reason or another, injuries, age, combination of the two. And you noted a couple of times where the Titans did make a move for somebody like that the last couple of years. Is there anybody on all the list of names that you put out there that intrigues you the most that might be a fit?
Oh, intrigues me the most versus might be a fit are probably different answers, because, like, Von Miller is a Hall of Famer. Von Miller is going to be one of the best players that anybody saw in this generation. Obviously, that's intriguing if you can go get somebody of that caliber. But fit for what the Titans are building, fit for what makes sense in this team. I'm stalling to rack my brain of some of the names I mentioned in the secondary. Somebody like Tre'Davious White, who's had a bunch of success historically. I really don't know how much tread is left on the tires, but that's
I think when you put When you put Adoree Jackson's name in there, I'll bet you there were some Titans fans that didn't know he was still in the league. It's been so long since he's played here, but he has stuck around for a while. I thought that was intriguing.
Yeah, that's another good one. I thought about Adoree as a option just because I know that people will be excited to bring back somebody who's a familiar face, a familiar name. He played last year. He's a guy who's capable of playing, and that's what makes this time of year so interesting. Of like, we'll take Joey Bosa as the example because he might be the guy who's going to command the most money if and when he signs somewhere. He's not going to sign somewhere to be a number three. He's either going to go to a contender or he's going to be a number one somewhere. And so, I don't know. I think that in the case of Adoree, the question is he willing to come here to be a number three or number four? Or is he trying to hold out to be a potential starter somewhere?
I don't know. That's always going to be a complication when you are trying to make these signings late in the year, because it's about fit, but it's also about how do they fit into their plans of who they might be able to be.
Nick Suss of the Tennessean has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Nick, as always, it's been a pleasure. We'll catch up soon.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
By the way, one texter says, this man's turn signal was confusing the mess out of me. I couldn't figure it out while I was driving. Nick obviously driving, which is okay. Hopefully it was hands-free, but he had his turn signal on, so somebody listening thought it was their turn signal. I can only imagine. I've been there.
Oh, man.
We'll get back to it another time. 615-737-1025. All right, we're going to get back into the Predators. They made a trade within the past hour. They have traded Fedor Svechkov and Zachary LaRue to the Colorado Avalanche for basically center Jack Drury. Yet another trade, both trades made by Chris McFarland as president of hockey operations and GM of the Predators, have been with his old boss, Joe Sakic, in Colorado. We'll talk about that. We'll take your reaction. Again, the trade. Fedor Svechkov and Zachary LaRue traded from Nashville to Colorado for Jack Drury. The Predators also received a prospect by the name of Chase Bradley and a third-round pick in the 2029 NHL draft. That kid, by the way, probably right now doing his math homework. But we'll take your reaction to it. 615-737-1025 today. The Nashville Sounds take on the Gwinnett Stripers at First Horizon Park. First pitch is at 6:35. Catch all of the action on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure, Maple Street Biscuit Company, Mad Fireworks, and Social Cantina. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Getting back into the Predators. They've been good to us the last week, making trades while we're on the air. We appreciate that. Thank you, Chris McFarland. McFarland makes his second trade as the head of the Predators front office, just like his first trade. It involves his former employer, the Colorado Avalanche. The Nashville Predators acquired forward Jack Drury. That's really all you need to know. A prospect named Chase Bradley and a 2029 third-round pick for Zachary LaRue and Fedor Svechkov. Two first-round picks from 2021, out the door. Drury comes in. He's 26 years old, a true center, really solid defensive player. He isn't going to wow you offensively. But one thing we have been talking about, Willie, is the Predators need players in that age bracket, 23, 24, 25, 26, players who are of that age, who have NHL experience, which Drury does. Correct me if I'm wrong, he's played parts of six seasons in the NHL. He was a part of the initial Mikko Rantanen trade from Colorado to Carolina. He went to Colorado along with Martin Natchez in the original Mikko Rantanen trade. So, right. Look,
and that was a three-way trade that brought them Taylor Hall,
yes,
as well.
Yes, it was
the underrated piece that put it over the top,
yes,
I think, for Carolina.
Some savvy work.
As it turned out, yeah.
Some savvy work from the Hurricanes. We will take your reaction, 615-737-1025. Jeff says, you wanted to get away from the Predator way. Well, part of the problem is that the Predators have always drafted for the bottom six with a little upside. Stepping in the right direction, I assume that means the trade is a step in the right direction. Sam says, the Preds need to trade all of their picks for established players if they want a chance. They haven't hit on a draft pick in 10 years. Arvidsson and Yossi are the only ones who have ever contributed. Organization is historically terrible at drafting. Ask Willie and Adam to name a prospect the Predators have hit on in the last 10 years. First of all, to say that Arvidsson and Yossi are the only ones the Predators have hit on, are you talking about within the past 10 years? Yossi was drafted more than 10 years ago.
Yeah, he was 2012. I will agree with him that the last 10 years, they have not hit a home run. You know, they went through a period of time. When you look at the best ever Predators teams, right? The team that went to the finals in 2017, and you can wind it back a couple of years before that and a couple of years after that. So let's say from about 2015 to 2020, pretty good window where they were really good. Division, mm-hmm. couple of division titles, a Western Conference championship, a President's Trophy. They hit on a lot of non-first-round picks. Matthias Ekholm, Victor Arvidsson, UC Saros, Roman Yossi. None of those guys are first-round picks. Those were great picks. And then Ryan Ellis and Shea Weber. And Shea Weber, also not a first-round pick. Pekka, not a first-round pick. So if you look at that crop, they went through a really good era of drafting a lot of good players. I'm probably forgetting them. Craig Smith, another second-round pick. But in the last 10 years, I have to agree with the caller. They have not hit the home run. They've had a lot of players that have become NHL players, but they haven't blossomed into those cornerstone people. They're hoping that the current group that's aged right now between 19 and 2021 has a few of those gems. Let's hope Matt Wood is one of them. Let's see.
Well, you made a point during the break that was a smart point, if I do say so myself, to pat you on the back. Chris McFarland, he's been talking so much about the prospects. Brady Martin, Matthew Wood, I would still keep in that conversation yes. because he's still so young. Riker Lee, Cameron Reed.
Igor Sorin, who Igor can't Sorin. Even come to the he, North America for another year.
The times we've heard from McFarland, and by the way, he will address reporters tomorrow, I believe at 11 a.m. to preview the NHL draft. But when we've heard from him, he's brought up those prospects, often unprompted. He clearly sees a lot in those players. So you've got to make room for those players by moving out the prospects who aren't panning out, such as Fedor Svechkov and Zachary Leroux.
Yeah, they have too many prospects for the amount of slots they have. And that's why for this particular season, remember, this is still a project 3 or 4 years in the making. He's just starting. But when you have a big pool of 15 prospects, they can't all make it. There's not enough room for them, and they're not realistically all going to become great players. So you have to try to pick and choose who you're willing to move and who you really want to keep and build around. And you know, I think of Drury as a guy that is going to be, first of all, I think he is still pretty young at 26.
Yes.
He's better. He has played way better hockey than Svechkov has played at this point. You kept waiting for Svechkov to get to a next level. He didn't do it. And maybe Colorado sees a guy that can flash, and on that team, maybe he does better for them. Maybe it does start connecting the dots.
Or Svechkov goes the way of another former Predators player who was traded to the Colorado Avalanche. It's a different situation because of where they were drafted. Juuso Parsonen.
Yeah, but Juuso Parsonen got to a point where they thought he was going to be something pretty good for Nashville. I was encouraged by him. And then he just never got to the next level. Same thing happened with Tomasino. And so you can't argue with somebody that says, what's the deal? They haven't drafted great in the last 10 years.
By the way, because you guys were curious, Drury and Colton played 240 minutes and 20 seconds together at even strength last season in Colorado. So they do have familiarity with each other. So it's possible they could be line mates here in Nashville. Let's go to our phone line driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in Ryan in Nashville. Ryan, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. The only thing I'm thinking with these moves is McFarland selling these bets going, hey, this is your chance to prove that you guys are still together or I'm blowing this team up at the trade deadline. The only thing I can think of is he's moving other than making a move for the prospects, but that might be what his thing is going, look, here's your chance. Prove me wrong that you guys can actually do this. And if not, then at trade deadline, we're going to blow this up and see where we go.
Thank you, Ryan. And I
think he's got some flexibility along those lines.
Right. But like Drury, again, 26 years old, I believe, let's see, was his career high in points what he had this season. Mm-hmm. He had 27 points this season. 10 goals.
All at even strength, by
the way. Yes, 10 goals, 27 points. He had 27 points a few years ago for the Hurricanes, but he only had 8 goals. So, you know, best season of his career, playing for a loaded team in Colorado, but he played a key role in the bottom six. You know, Jack Drury is not going to wow you offensively. That's not his role. You need players like Drury to be a part of a successful team. But it does lead me to wonder, along the lines of Ryan's point, now you have a little bit more of a safety blanket, I guess you could say. Again, I'm not, like, I don't expect Jack Drury to play first line center for the Nashville Predators. But if you ultimately decide to trade Ryan O'Reilly, you at least have another true center who can pick up some of the slack. He's not Ryan O'Reilly. Let's not kid ourselves. But you have someone who can help pick up the slack if you decide to do that. And as we talked about earlier in the show, before this trade went down, there is a world where Chris McFarland can do two things at the same time. He can bring in players such as Ross Colton and Jack Drury and try to help this team right now, but he can then trade other prospects, draft picks, and try to take a big swing at someone who's a bit more of a needle mover offensively, like we've seen some of these moves that have been made around the NHL over the past couple of days.
Do you think he's thinking that if I can make the bottom of this lineup better, then that'll help the other guys out, instead of trying to break it down, you know, trying to trade away some of these top guys and trying to get draft picks, or just trying to bring in younger players, that if I build up the bottom half of my lineup, then that will inherently, especially during the, you know, middle part of the season, it's going to make us better.
I think so. I think getting better on the margins is what the hope is here, mm-hmm. for McFarland. And I think it's also a signal that he likes the next wave of prospects better than the prospects that are aging a little bit more. Both LaRue and Svechkov were first-round picks that were sort of hitting the stage of their career. It's like, what are they? And do we want to keep them, or is it time to move on? And it looks like McFarland, in his evaluation, was that Svechkov and LaRue are going to be NHL players, but that Drury is an upgrade, at least for now, and he's still 26. You know, he could be a good role player for a while. He's been a high-end fourth-line center on a very deep, you know, the best team in hockey in the regular season. So does that mean he could even play some third-line center for this Predators team? Maybe. He's a really good penalty killer. He's going to win faceoffs. He's not going to score a ton. I think of him as, you know, the role players they traded, McCarron, Cole Smith, you know, they needed to replace that.
Bunting.
I thought LaRue was maybe a decent replacement.
Yeah.
For Cole Smith, but evidently Chris McFarland didn't think so. But Drury, I think, will play a lot of that role where he could be a reliable guy that you could put out there at the end of a game like they did with McCarron a lot. They didn't have that after they traded McCarron, so they needed to replace that in some form.
One texter says, this seems bad. This is Sean. This seems bad. Dumping two first-round prospects still early in their NHL careers for a third or fourth-line center? I don't know, guys. Seems like this is a move at least a year too soon. But, like, let's talk quickly about Fedor Svechkov, all right? Svechkov is 23. He has played 122 games in the NHL. There is still room for Svechkov to grow. Absolutely no doubt about it. But I feel like He was reaching a point where it's okay. What's the clean way I can say this? Either poop or get off the,
pot.
Yeah,
the porcelain throne.
Yes, like Svechkov, to me, he didn't bring much to the table. I thought this past season was was a major disappointment.
No question.
And I know there have been studies done about this, like how many games does an NHL player need to play before you know what he is? I feel like 122 games over two seasons for Svechkov is still like below that line.
Yeah, it's right on the border. It's
But you're getting there.
Yeah.
So like could Svechkov turn out to be a really solid role player in the NHL? Sure. But I feel like
But that's what Drury is.
Right.
And he's only 26.
Right. And you need players like that on your team. Like, to me, moving off of Svechkov, like, I'm not too broken up about it. I just, like, you're getting a more proven player who is in an age range the Predators need. Now, he's not the exciting player who's going to score 40 goals and take butts out of seats. And the Predators do need those players. Let's not mistake that.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting trade. And we will discuss it more coming up next. 615-737-1025. Again, the breaking news within the past hour or so. The Predators have gotten in on the fun in the NHL offseason. It isn't the splashiest trade, but the Predators acquired Jack Drury from the Colorado Avalanche for Fedor Svechkov and Zachary LaRue. 615-737-1025. Also coming up in the next hour of the program, a really interesting story dropped about something we spent a lot of time talking about earlier this year. We'll discuss that coming up next as well. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home with a $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.